Committee will come to order at 10 minutes after 8 this morning. We're going to have the pleasure of hearing the Governor's Department for Commissioner of Military and Veterans Affairs. The next bill is, we're going to hear HCR 20 involving Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Then we'll go to HB 409 on campaign expenditures on the Supreme Court decision of United, and then HB 251 on priority of towing lanes. And this morning we have with us on my left, Representative Peterson. Representative Peggy Wilson is excused for part of the committee hearing this morning. I understand Reverend Grunberg is en route from somewhere. And on my far right, Representative Johnson, Reverend Gatto, Vice Chair, Representative Paul Seaton. And with that, I'd like to begin with our guest, Governor Kakis. Not governor, not yet. Maybe someday, but...
seems to be a career Kakis. Path, doesn't it?
Well, it happened before almost. Good morning, sir. Please introduce yourself, and if you could give us some of your background. I see you have a short resume here. I'd like to hear what happened right after high school.
Sir, good morning. I'm Tom Kakis, and I'm currently serving as the Adjutant General for Alaska and Commissioner for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And right after high school, let me go into exactly how high school started. My parents are both immigrants, and they came to Alaska on the Homestead Act, and we had a homestead out in Pittman, which is just on the other side of Wasilla. And they felt that an education was important, so out of the five kids, they gave us the opportunity to go to a boarding school in different parts of the country. And I chose Connecticut and went there, had 4 years of high school, and then went to college in Vermont. And coming home every summer working for the railroad kept me in good shape, and also I managed to get out of college without any bills as a result of a lot of work in the summertime. So with a degree in hand and a roommate, we bicycled across country, got here. We met some firefighters in McGrath on that first summer, and jumping out of airplanes seemed like a pretty good deal to pursue at the time, and the National Guard just happened to have some slots for us. So we headed off and spent that winter out to basic training, and went through as a 91 Bravo at that time, which is a military medic. So my National Guard career started jumping out of airplanes with a reconnaissance detachment here in Alaska, and that kind of progressed to where I went to OCS here in Alaska, Officer Candidate School. Got my commission in 1980, and became a second lieutenant in infantry. I progressed through a career with the Alaska National Guard, and at the same time was hired with the municipality of Anchorage as a police officer. So in 79, starting my career there as a National Guardsman, two career paths, continued to pursue the military career and the law enforcement career. In 2000, I left the Anchorage Police Department after 21 and a half years as a captain and went full-time National Guard with counter-drug being the military support to civilian authorities. So I retired from law enforcement, went right back to work with law enforcement with a lot bigger, better toys to help them with drug addressing. So as I progressed there, I was then identified as a candidate for general officer and administrative commander for the new missile defense complex being established at Greeley. From there to the Alaska Army National Guard commander, and now consideration for the adjutant general. I'm a fully recognized federally recognized general officer in the U.S. military. I've been to the War College. I've got a master's degree in strategic studies and fully meet the qualifications of general officer.
Well, it makes us, you know, what little the rest of us have accomplished here. There may have been some lack of judgment in jumping out of perfectly good airplanes. do you have a reason for that kind of behavior?
Nothing that I can explain, sir, but I'm back on permissive jump status, and my first jump since 1985 is going to be done Thursday, so I'm looking forward to that again. So.
Well, I wouldn't have a problem jumping out of an airplane myself, but first the wing has to fall off, something like that. Somebody had their hand up for a question. Was that you, Representative Gatto?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. General, interesting background. That was the first 5 years. What have you done since?
Well, I've raised a family. I've got a young son who is getting ready to graduate from University of Oregon. My other son is currently in the Alaska National Guard, so I'm in charge of an organization where you can go fly on the weekend with your son as crew chief on a helicopter and do a family thing there. He's getting ready to go to Iraq on his second deployment. He just got back from Kosovo. So again, the National Guard's become kind of a family deal. My wife is also a municipal employee who's retired about the same time, so we're both municipal employee retirees.
I have one grandson in the National Guard. Unfortunately, it's the Utah National Guard rather than the Alaska National Guard. President Peterson, any questions? President Gruenberg. Okay. You said your parents or grandparents were immigrants?
My parents.
And where were they from, sir?
My mother's from England. My dad is from Lithuania.
Wonderful. Okay. I believe we have... I'd like to, obviously, thank you for your service. I'm so proud of the Alaska National Guard. That includes everybody, including you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
I have Mike Coons would like to offer some testimony. You can stay there if you like.
Mike.
Sir, at the committee, thanks for having me. I'm Mike Coons. I'm also a major. I'm the executive officer for 1st Battalion Central Command Alaska State Defense Force. I really wasn't preparing to do this, so I'm just going to kind of wing it. Bottom line of this is there's been a lot of change in the Alaska State Defense Force in the last year and a half. Some of it has created a lot of concern. We've lost some people, unfortunately. There has been a lot of information, misinformation, and one of the things that I was very fortunate about was that General Kakis and I had a very frank 2+ hour conversation, and he showed me what about the statutes, how they are following the statutes, how that we are. How we're going to be utilized in a better role in a lot of ways. I'm an old readiness NCO from the Air Force, so I can understand and conceptualize a lot of this stuff that's going on. So I give my full endorsement to the general as far as becoming the adjutant general. I think he's got a good vision. I think we can work together closely with making the Alaska State Defense Force even better. I think the biggest thing we got to do is get the Alaska State Defense Force to be known, because we are not known. When I talk to your staff, a lot of people in here in Juneau and their staff, I say the first thing I question is, do you know who the people know about the Alaska State Defense Force? No. So we need to work on that. But thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much, Major. Thank you for your service. I do have a letter that our representative, Bob Heron, asked me to read into the record. I'll do that now. The letter is dated March 1st, 2010, and it says, for the record, Mr. Chairman, meaning me, General Katkus is of high caliber, has a strong moral fiber, and is a valuable asset to Alaska. My interaction with these several months during our frequent visits to the communities and homes of ATG members has been and continues to be outstanding. Obviously, from his resume, General Katkus truly has come up through the ranks and can relate to servicemen and servicewomen with understanding and compassion, yet with high expectations of himself and those who serve under his command. Mr. Chairman, please forward the General's name to the joint session of the Alaska Legislature with the complete confidence in his abilities to serve our state. That's from Representative Bob Heron, who couldn't be here this morning. Do you want me to read that into the record? And I'm happy to do so. And from what you said, you are what I believe we call a Mustang, right? Where you came, you know the term, right?
No, sir.
Okay, well, you're going to learn it. At least that's the Air Force term. Somebody who comes up through the ranks. You started enlisted and you became an officer and now a general officer. So that's what a Mustang is. Reverend, you look like you had a question.
Well, no, that was what we used in the Navy, but we're old guys around here, and we served in Vietnam, and I'll leave it at that. But that was the term we used, too. And I'm happy to support your nomination, General, and I think you'll be a great adjutant general.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. If there are no other comments or questions, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that the State Affairs Committee has reviewed the qualifications for Brigadier General Katkus for the Adjutant General position, and that we recommend that we forward the name to a joint session for consideration.
Thank you very much. And our signing this form does not indicate that any of us will vote for or against General Katkus or any other nominee. This is simply, we reviewed your qualification and pass it on to the joint session. Thank you very much, sir.
Sir, thank you all very much for your time this morning. Thank you.
Okay. We'll take a short at ease while we sign the paperwork. House State Affairs Committee will come back to order, please. We'll now be hearing House Concurrent Resolution Number 20, sponsored by Representative Anna Faircloth, with the co-sponsors Representative Peggy Wilson, Holmes, and Osman, and I suppose soon some of our other names. With that, would you please identify yourselves and tell us why we should consider this resolution?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for hearing HCR 20. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month 2010. With that, I'd like to turn the presentation over to my staff, Karen Schusler.
For the record, my name is Karen Schusler, and I'm with Representative Faircloth's office. We're here today to ask for your support on HCR 20, proclaiming the month of April 2010 to be Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Sexual assault affects men, women, children of all racial, cultural, and economic backgrounds. A person is 2.6 times more likely to be sexually assaulted in Alaska than any other state in the nation. Sexual assault leaves a long-lasting physical and emotional scar that can influence every aspect of an individual's life. I urge your support and pass this resolution from committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for sponsors of the bill? Representative Gatto.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Page 1, line 8. This refers to 1 in 11 men report being victims. Is there a ratio of reported versus probable? It almost sounds unrealistic that they're 1 in 11. I mean, we're talking 10% of the men have sexual violence done to them is surprising. But I'm just curious if there was a ratio on the likely number.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gatto, there are surveys that have been done nationwide trying to check the probability that you're asking for, and that's where the number comes from. There is a probability that, for those who report, there is 1 in 11 that reports. It's difficult to predict what is out there. Men, from my perspective, have a more difficult time reporting that there is shame attached to this issue in men, women, and children, and that there is a perception specifically from men that there is more shame surrounding their particular when violence occurs to them. It's difficult for a man to disclose. So there's not a hard number. There's not a survey out there that would say that there is 40% possibly of men that have been involved. It's all in how you define it. If you look at national reporting standards, we're reporting, the state of Alaska reports in a mechanical way. In other words, we don't access a computer database nationally. And so under the old definition, as I recall it, well, I don't want to get graphic in here. It's going out gavel to gavel. But there are specific ways that rape is described in a specific way. A specific body part has to touch another specific body part for it to be considered inappropriate conduct. And so there is many other things that are inappropriate, and it's not counted. So I don't want to be graphic. It's not necessary. I think all of you understand what I'm trying to get to, but sexual assault is difficult to talk about all in itself, and so people do on blind surveys report, and that's where the number comes from.
Reverend Gunnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if a person is sexually assaulted day after day after day, week, month, year, is that considered one person sexually assaulted, or are those 50 instances averaged over the general population?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gatto, that's one person being assaulted, but there are multiple incidents of violence, and so a report would have all of those incidents. If the state were to prosecute, there would be individual infractions against the person on every point that could be proven or the allegation made.
Thank you, and I would imagine they're far more than ever reported, both for men and women and children.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you know I used to work as the executive director of Standing Together Against Rape, and I would just say that a rape crisis center or a domestic violence center or a suicide line receives hundreds, if not thousands, of calls every year that don't really count in the numbers that you see before you today.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do men hesitate to use the facilities? Centers because of just reluctance to be the only man there or one of very few?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruenberg, it's my belief that men access services less frequently than women. In my experience at STAR, 95% to 98% of the clients that we served direct service to physically at the location were women. And so that leads me to believe that if a 1 in 11 men are affected, they are less likely to seek support services, but that's anecdotal.
But Mr. Chair, I'm glad you're aware of that, and I would hope that that as you're, not you, but as the centers are talking to their populations, people who would use it, that I don't know what needs to be done, but for both sexes, so they feel as comfortable in going there. And I know we dealt with legislation involving a few years ago, some of you will remember, assaults that take place at the center, people stalking the folks at the center, and the security is a real issue, and I know you're sensitive to that, Representative, and you too. So I'm glad to see it.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you for your testimony. Do we have anybody online in the audience that would like to testify? Or in the audience? No, with that, I'll close public testimony. Any discussion among the committee? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think that we all recognize that this is one of the places where we would like not to be first in the nation. I appreciate the folks who bring this forward, and hopefully we can be working not only through this public awareness, but through other mechanisms to bring these rates down. And so thank you for bringing it forward.
I would invite anybody on the committee or any other legislator to join in and co-sponsor this resolution. And I'll entertain a motion on this. Representative Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would like to place on the record and invite you, the governor of the state of Alaska, Governor Parnell, is putting together a walk, a march in March, on March 31st, I believe at 12 noon, starting at the Capitol, to take a bold step, as agencies have many times before, but this year with the governor of the state of Alaska and the First Lady, on a march to ask Alaskans to step forward on this issue. And I just would invite each committee member to come to that walk and to make a public statement about the epidemic proportion of violence in our state and to help communities around this state step forward and try to look at reducing that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I would ask you at appropriate time on the House floor to please make that announcement to everybody and keep repeating maybe some notices up in the Capitol building.
Mr. Chairman, it is appropriate that the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault is here in Juneau today and tomorrow and should be visiting offices around the Capitol.
Thank you very much. I'll entertain a motion. Representative Vice Chair Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move House Concurrent Resolution number 20 from committee with individual recommendations. I do not see a fiscal note. Is that correct?
Nope. No fiscal note.
There is one? Just a moment. Well, with any attached.
With any attached. Very good. Okay. Without objection, passes from the committee. Thank you for bringing this important legislation to us.
Thanks.
At ease while we do the paperwork, please. And again, House Bill 409, which deals with the Supreme Court decision and disclosure and so on. So I'd ask Mike Stafford or Mike Seaton to please come forward. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record, and you just give us a brief synopsis of what happened in the last hearing on this bill, and you know, bring us up to date before we start in on this one. And it is my intention that, if possible, I'd like to pass this bill from committee today.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton.
Would you like to move the CS for discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move CS for House Bill 409, version E, before us.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dornberg.
I assume, if I may dialogue with the Vice Chair here for a moment,
yes,
I assume
please.
The only difference between this and the previous version is the adoption of your amendments?
Well, we're going to determine it in a minute.
Okay.
Let's get it on the record, then we can ask these questions.
I'll withdraw my objection.
Thank you. Okay, did you... Are you going to object for discussion purposes?
Do you want me to?
Please.
I will.
He has.
I did.
What have we here?
These are
people
from
Fairbanks.
Okay. These are offline. There's nobody in the audience that I'm aware of.
Okay. I got it. Okay. Good morning, Mr. Seeker.
My name is Mike Seeker. I'm staff representative Bob Lynn. And I'm just going to give you a quick recap of what the bill is basically about, and I might be able to help you with a few of the changes real quick. Simply, what we're doing here is we're trying to come up with laws that address disclosures and disclaimers for independent expenditures by corporations, unions, LLCs, and really quickly, the meat of the bill is just if you go to, for example, section four and page three, that's basically our disclosure section, okay? And on page 5, section 10, that's basically our disclaimer section. And on page 6, that new section 11, that section 11 we put in there, that's basically what we're attempting to do there is a personal liability for a chief officer in a corporation in the event of statements that are defamatory. And one of the things we did do, just so you know, right below that on section 12, we may have to do some things to the CS there. We passed part of an amendment that basically creates a 24-hour rule for reporting the expenditure. And I think you have a checklist before you that will cover everything from the new CS for version E of the bill. And there's a memo explaining basically that we had an amendment last week that I think we're going to need to complete, but you'll have to speak to that, okay? And I'll go through this as you want, if you have any questions at this point.
I would like to, what have we got here?
Something that Greenberg gave, so I'll
stay at right. Okay, I would like to, we took one of the amendments, do you remember the number of that amendment?
Yeah.
We divided the amendment into A and B.
Through the chair, if you'd like, I could go through the changes real quickly with the amendments.
On that particular one?
Yeah, if you want me to go to that one.
Let's
right.
do that first. It's kind of left over from the last.
Okay.
Yeah, I got it.
This
I
is
yeah.
what would be.
There was three.
R.
Three A and three B.
Correct.
Right? And that was R. Was it R dot three?
That's correct.
Okay. I'd like to bring, that was Amendment 3, right?
That's correct.
Okay. I'd like to bring Amendment 3 back on the table, and particularly 3A. Would you tell us what 3A?
Okay.
Yeah, you got a question? Yeah, okay. So would Mr. Siegert, would you tell us quickly what 3A did that we adopted, and then we're going
to
go on.
If you go to page 6, and what would now be line 11 and 12, we changed that from 3 days to 24 hours, okay? Originally, Virgin Aura Bill said an independent expenditure report required under 1513-040E shall be filed with the commission. Originally said not later than 3 days. We changed that to 24 hours, okay? And then what happens is the language that follows from line 13 in your new CS, it's either redundant or contradictory language, as you can see. We're talking about an independent expenditure report filed under this section must include any expenditure not yet reported before the filing date. Well, it's going to be reported within 24 hours now. And it also talks about independent expenditures exceeding $250 and not made within 9 days of an election. Basically, what we've done is we created a 24-hour rule for all reporting of independent expenditures. So that language is...
So would it be your recommendation then to bring what became 3B onto the table for discussion?
Correct. And you'll see we changed the lines now to 13 through 17.
Okay. We had tabled what was identified as 3B. I want to bring 3B off the table back into consideration by the committee. Representative Seaton.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I'd move Amendment 3B.
Okay. Is there any objection to 3B? Okay. 3B has passed without objection.
And
Representative Seaton?
And Mr. Chairman, since the copy that we have was to the previous version and there's a line change, I'd like to make that a conceptual amendment.
Representative Seaton?
So I'd like to move 3B as a conceptual amendment.
Okay. Without objection, conceptual amendment passes. Is there a number? What would be the number on that conceptual?
This would be amendment number 1 to version E, I believe. The new version of the bill that we have is version E, so I believe this would be amendment number
1. Number 1 to version E. Okay. Did you have a question?
About all these other ones.
Okay. With that, I would like to start moving down through the amendments that we have before us. And I'm going to ask Mr. Seeker to recommend an order that we go through these amendments so it makes the most sense. But first, yes.
Are you moving to the new version of the
amendments? Yes, we're moving to the CS for 409 version E.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenberg.
I was the one who objected for discussion. And before removing my objection, I would just ask through the chair, Mr. Seeker, had that completed your explanation of version E?
Yes.
I remove my objection.
Thank you. Are we okay now? Good. Okay. Mr. Seeker, would you give us some guidance on which amendments it makes sense to consider first and in what order?
Well, through the chair, I'm a scattered, organized mess here, so if you could follow me. I put this checklist out. If you can go to Amendment E1.
E1. Just a moment, please, while we find it.
Give us a minute.
Okay. Okay. I would move, that would be amendment number 1, or 2. Amendment number 2 is going to be E.1. That's my amendment, and I would move amendment number 2.
I'll object for discussion.
Object for discussion. Mr. Seeker, would you talk to this amendment, please?
And I'd also like to point out that Alpheus Ballard, the legislative legal drafter of this bill, is also online if you need to
Thank you.
Make sure I know what I'm talking about. Okay. What happened at the last meeting on this, hearing on this bill, March 2nd, we passed an amendment that made several changes throughout the bill on page 2, page 6, throughout, where we put the word independent before expenditures, okay? So we really started talking about solely independent expenditures, and unintentionally didn't speak to the fact that there are expenditures beyond independent expenditures, okay? These are expenditures made by candidates or someone in coordination with a candidate, not what we were looking to capture. What this amendment does is it puts in a section, 1513.067, that we had repealed. And what it does is it clearly states that there are expenditures, who may make expenditures, only the following may make an expenditure, that is not an independent expenditure. So we cover a loophole I think we had created. That makes sense. And I think this amendment will put this in and will cover all kinds of expenditures, independent and otherwise.
Any questions, comments from the committee?
Yeah.
Representative Grunberg?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to look at the amendment, lines 14 and 15.
Line 14.
And that relates to the bill itself, Section 9.
Section 9.
Which is on page 4, line 29, to page 5, line 6. I understand Mr. Bullard's on the phone, and that amendment appears to be making an important grammatical change, and I believe that should stay in the bill, and I would be prepared to move an amendment to the amendment, Mr. Chair, to delete lines 14 and 15 of the amendment, thereby retaining Section 9, which makes changes in to on both of those. I see that probably Mr. Bullard wants really to delete the reference on line 5 to AS 1513.0673. And my amendment, I'm going to make it a little differently, Mr. Chair.
Well, are you making an amendment or just talking about what you might do?
I'm talking about what I would like to do, but I do think we have to leave that deletion there, but I do think we should change in to on in those two cases. That's grammatically correct.
Okay, so before you move, possibly move them, I'd like to talk to Mr. Bullard, get his input.
Thank you.
Mr. Bullard, are you online?
Good morning, Chairman Lynn, members of the committee. Yes, this is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal on the line.
Thank you. Did you hear Representative Grunberg's questions or comments?
I did, Chairman Lynn.
Would you comment on those, please?
Through the chair, I don't believe that the changes that Representative Grunberg is suggesting pose any harm. We can leave that section in with just the grammatical changes if that is his desire.
With that, Mr. Chair, I would like to move an amendment to the amendment. And the amendment's a conceptual amendment. So we will, on lines 14 and 15, we will not delete Section 9 of the bill. Okay. What we will do is change Section 9 so that Section 9 shall be amended on page 5, line 5, by deleting the phrase bracket by AS 1513.0673, close bracket. In other words, that is, Mr. Bullard, you do want to leave that language in, so we will be deleting that subsection, correct? Through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg. I would characterize it more as leaving that language in the statutory reference to 1513.0673. But yes.
You want us...
through the chair.
Through the chair. So with the amendment, we would still be...
deleting...
The amendment to the amendment.
Thank you. The amendment to the amendment. The lines five, line five would read, authorized, and then we would take that phrase out, so it would be... I'm slightly confused. How should lines five and six read, Mr. Bullard, through the chair? I'm getting confused myself here.
That is on the record.
I know. It's also true. Through the chair, Mr. Bullard, do you want us to keep the deletion of that subsection, or do you want that subsection to remain in the law?
Through the chair, Representative Groomberg, I will speak to what I understand, which is what you would like to see, and that's the grammatical changes that are currently appear in the CS for House Bill 409, State Affairs, for those to remain, and I will bring back the reference to 1513-0673 if you adopt the original amendment being discussed, and that is how I would understand your conceptual amendment to the amendment.
And that, for the record, Mr. Chair, with that explanation, that is my amendment to the amendment.
And, Mr. Bullard, does this go to the heart of the bill? Is it necessary?
Through the chair, the amendment to the amendment, I don't believe I would characterize it as having any substantive effect. It would make two grammatical changes, and while it would be nice if everything in our statutes read in a perfectly grammatical way, legally it's not necessary.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Yeah, I'd like to object to the amendment to the amendment.
Okay.
And I would like to get, it seems like if we leave this in, we've got almost a conflict between Section 7 of the amendment that we have before us, which is who may make an expenditure, the candidate, individual, or group. And then if we leave Section 9 in there, we're talking about the authorized makers of expenditures, and we are having a slightly different grouping of people in Section 7 and Section 9 that can make expenditures. So I'd like an explanation of how those two things are not in conflict, whereas one says, as Section 7 says, a candidate, an individual, a group that is registered, or a non-group entity that is registered can. And Section 9 says the authorized makers of expenditures are the candidate, candidate's campaign manager, deputy treasurer, or, you know, on behalf of a group, or made by the group's campaign manager. So,
okay. Who would you like to explain that? Representative Greenberg or Mr. Bullard or Mr. Seeker?
Mr. Bullard.
Through the chair, I'll speak first to Section 7 of the bill, which is what I believe Representative Seaton is talking about in terms of possible confliction with Section 7 of the amendment. Section 7 of the bill, which modifies AS 1513-082B, speaks to expenditures and the reporting of those expenditures. Section 7 of the amendment speaks to who may make expenditures, not to the reporting of expenditures.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
That wasn't the conflict that I was talking about. It was the Section 7, the new Section 7 in Amendment Number 2, and Section 9 of the bill, if we leave it in instead of deleting it.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I don't believe there's a conflict. This just speaks to who may make expenditures on behalf of a candidate, that is the candidate's campaign treasurer or deputy treasurer or those authorized in or on behalf of a group. Forgive me if I'm not addressing the substance of your question.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, you are. I guess I'm trying to figure out, we have Section 7 that says who can make the persons that can make an independent expenditures are listed here,
as a group can make an independent expenditure, a non-group entity that is registered can make an expenditure. And then I'm trying to figure out how that coordinates with the section number 9 in the bill, the authorized makers of expenditures, which seems to have a somewhat different listing of who's authorized to make expenditures.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton. Section 9 of the bill speaks only to those people that can make expenditures on behalf of a candidate. Section 7 in the amendment of 1513-067 is a little bit more global in that it speaks to who may make expenditures that are not independent expenditures under the chapter, not just on behalf of a candidate.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I guess I'm looking at, through lines 5 and 6 on page 5 of the bill, subsection 2, because there were authorized on or behalf of a group that may, so are we saying there that the authorized maker of expenditure in subsection 2 is authorized to make expenditures on behalf of a candidate, and is that then different than the groups in our new amendment, section 7?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton. Section 9 of the bill, beginning on page 4 of the CF, is broken into two paragraphs. The first one deals with expenditures authorized by or on behalf of a candidate, and 2 does not speak to the candidate, but who may make expenditures for a group, and that is only the group's campaign treasurer. The group campaign treasurer would be allowed under Section 7 of the amendment currently under discussion if that group is registered to make campaign expenditures. It's the bifurcation between the paragraphs of candidate and group and who may make expenditures on behalf of each.
Mr. Book, would the amendment to the amendment make this amendment more or less effective?
I may withdraw.
Or would it be the same?
Mr. Chair, I may withdraw the amendment.
The Chairman Lynn.
Yes.
The suggested amendment to the amendment from Representative Grunberg would have no substantive legal effect, of which I'm aware.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bullard, through the chair, I think that I do not want to talk about Amendment 2 for a moment. I want to talk about Section 9 to the bill. And the only substantive, my suggestion was simply grammatical. It should be on behalf of something, not in behalf of something. It's nothing to do legally. The thing that this does legally, Mr. Chair, is delete on line 5 the reference to AS 15.13.0673. And the text of that is found, just for reference now, in the amendment number 2. It's set out, the text of that section is set out on lines 4 through 10. And I'm simply referencing so you can see what they're talking about.
Well, again, you know, we have this many amendments to look at, and I'd like to move it out of committee today, so I would... Please keep your remarks brief and go take action on your amendment unless you decide to withdraw it.
Mr. Bullard, through the chair, is it important to delete the reference on line 5 of page 5 of the bill, to AS 15130673? Why do you want to take that reference out?
Mr. Bullard.
Through the chair, in the CS, 15.13.067 is repealed, and that's why that reference is removed.
But through the chair, now on amendment number 2, you're keeping it in. See, the amendment will retain that section under this. So I think we I'm going to change my amendment, Mr. Chair.
So you're going to have an amendment?
I'm withdrawing my amendment, and I'm going to put a new amendment. Okay.
You withdraw the other amendment.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, I want to keep this brief.
Okay? This will.
Thank you.
My amendment is to retain Section 7. I'm sorry. To delete on Amendment Number 2, lines 14 and 15, and instead to amend Section 9 of the bill to read the way it does on page 4, line 31, changing in to on, and then on line 5, change in to on page 5. But I think, and this is kind of a question, Mr. Bullard, retaining the language by AS 15130673, since now we're not repealing 067, we're retaining 067, so I think we have to keep that reference in. Through the chair. Mr. Bullard, do you agree?
Through the chair, Representative Groomberg. This is the same conceptual amendment as I understood your first amendment to the amendment to be. And yes, we can do that to keep the grammatical changes that are present in current Section 9 of the bill.
But we do need to retain the reference on line 5 to that statute, because in section, in amendment number 2, we are still retaining the section itself. So we have to keep that reference in the law, do we not, sir? Through the chair.
Through the chair, I would describe that as a helpful reference. Currently, a group that makes expenditures is required to be registered under 1513050, mm-hmm. whether that's referenced in section 1513067 or not. I would describe that as a helpful guide to the fact that a group has to register, but it is required by another statute.
Okay, so my amendment to the amendment is to retain, quote, by AS 15130673, not to repeal it, but the only thing that will happen in Section 9 is changing in to on.
Okay.
That's my amendment.
So is there any objection to the amendment to the amendment? Okay, and I want to recognize Representative Wilson joined us some time ago here. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So why are we retaining, I just don't quite understand why we're retaining that if it's covered in another statute somewhere else.
Mr.
Representative Gernberg.
That is the current law, and it is helpful here to have the reference to it in this particular section. It specifically says where it's authorized.
Representative Seaton, and I want to bring this discussion to a rapid culmination here. Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to object.
That's fine. Okay. Okay, you're going to object. Would you call the roll, please?
This is for Amendment 2
to... Amendment Number 2.
Representative Gatto.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes.
Representative Peterson.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Chair Lynn.
No.
3 yea, 4 nay.
The amendment failed, and we've spent, I don't know, 15 minutes on the grammatics here, and I'd like to, if I can, keep as close as I can to the substance of the bill rather than tweaking the grammar. Who made the objection to the primary amendment number 2?
I believe I did, and I'll withdraw it.
Okay. Any further objection? Representative Gatto.
New question.
On amendment number 2?
No.
On the amendment to the amendment?
No.
On what?
I just had another question for Mr. Bullock.
Representative, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Bullock, we have taken some great pains in the bill, especially on page 1, line 8, removing the words candidate, group, non-group. It happens again on page 5, line 10, candidate, group, non-group. But then when I looked at amendment number 2, gets put right back in again as candidate, individual, group, and non-group. That's a confusing thing for me. I think we've decided that a person is a corporation, or, and an individual is a single person, but now I'm troubled a little bit, at least, by putting the same language back in that we've deleted in other parts of the bill. Was that intentional, or should we change
what
it?
What are you talking about?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, that language does different things in different sections of the bill. In Section 1, that's a section that just provides to whom the chapter is applicable. There, by removing that language, candidate, group, non-group, entity, municipality, or individual, by removing that language, it makes clear that AS 1513, state elections, applies to all persons equally. In the amendment, for example, the restored Section 7 speaks to who may make expenditures that are not independent expenditures, a candidate of individual, group, or non-group entity. I did not want there to be any risk that there may be some perceived loophole that a corporation or a union, the subject of Citizens United, would be able to make expenditures. Citizens United deals only with independent expenditures. That's why that language is restored.
Okay, thank you. Who made the objection to Amendment 2?
I think I did.
Okay, and did you remove it?
Yes.
Okay, without further objection then, Amendment number 2 is adopted.
Now which one? It's
this one. Okay, Mr. Seeker, would you recommend the next amendment we should consider?
Number 1?
Yeah, the next amendment I have on the list is E2.
E2, okay. I would offer, there would be Amendment number 3. I'd offer Amendment number 3. That E.2, Mr. Seeker, would you speak to this?
And I'll object to
and
discussion.
Object for discussion.
All right.
I think this is the one. No,
yeah. Just so you know that this would be, it says Section 7, 1513-068. I just realized we just passed the Section 7, which is 1513-067. So it would probably become Section 8 if you supported this. This is a new section in the bill that basically parallels the federal law on prohibition of foreign nationals making independent expenditures. And there's a memo explaining that, and that's basically what it does.
And that's one of my prime concerns, of course, are foreign nationals getting involved in the decision-making process as to who... what candidate or what initiative is going to be supported or opposed. Representative Seaton?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just for review for the committee, we had testimony by the AG that represents APOC that they would have difficulty taking a violation to either APOC or the state courts because unless we have parallel language for the federal law, there's nothing that prohibits that in state law, so they would have to take it to federal court, a violation. So what this does is this incorporates the identical parameters that are in federal law in state law so that RAG can take a violation by a corporation or a union to APOC for that violation or to the state court system. And the memo is simply talking about preemption and are we preempted from doing that, and I think when you read the entirety of the memo, we're not preempted from putting this in. It's a identical language, it's not a conflict language, and so that's where we are.
Thank you. Mr. Seeker?
I just would like to point out that John Potassin is also online from the Department of Law for any of these issues as well.
Okay. Would you care to remove the objection?
I'll remove my objection.
Okay. Amendment number 3 passes. Okay. Next amendment, Mr. Seeker, you'd recommend?
Okay. I believe this amendment here.
Of which one?
E3 is what we're going to go to next.
That will become amendment number 4.
Great.
Mr. Seeger.
And what it would do is, if you go to page 5, okay, line 22, after the word, it says identify the on D, you would insert name and city and state of residence or principal place of business as applicable of each of, and then it would read the five largest contributors under AS 1513-040E5, if any, during the 12-month period before the date of the communication. All right, and then you would delete with the words top five contributors. I believe this was an amendment, Representative Lynn, you were talking about. And that's basically what it does. I think the intent is to make sure that, and if you read down lower, it inserts a new section that talks about transmitting by a if the ad is in a method, basically both audio and has audio and video components, you would also transmit it that way.
Okay.
So you have a TV ad. It's not enough just to scroll print on the screen. You also have to hear the voice.
Right. These things, you know, we've all seen them on TV commercials and so on. This adds a video, audio component to this, so we can not only see it as it scrolls by, but we can hear it. I think somebody, staff has only made a kind of a test, a verbal run on that, and it was under, it was either at or under eight seconds, as I recall. Did any comment? Representative Johnson and then Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're going to end up with a bunch of campaign ads that sound like Cal Worthington ads. Paid for by AS 4783, and they're going to be read so fast that it's not going to be legible. It's 8 seconds. It's almost a third of a 30-second ad that's going to be tied up with someone not being able to deliver their message but identifying someone. And just like when we disclaim it is paid for by Craig Johnson, people who want to know can go to a website. They can find out who this is. And I think all we're doing is basically, and as a former broadcaster, cluttering the air. And I don't know it's bad that people tune out these things. Maybe that's what we're shooting for here. But we're going to end up with, and if you've got the top five contributors or long corporate names, you're going to end up with it being, I think, 8 seconds. You're going to have somebody suing us because they're reading it too fast. I think that we're going to end up with 15 seconds of a 30-second ad saying who's paying for this and the message will be missed. And if that's what you want to do, that's fine. But I think we can't clutter the message necessarily with, I'm not sure we're not running afoul of the intent by cluttering the message so much that we're depriving them of freedom with the freedom of speech under the Supreme Court legislation. So I think that the top five contributors, it's available, it's online. Putting it in writing is not a problem. I don't see any problem with that. There's a certain type size it has to be, but to take up to half of a television ad or a radio ad by saying who the top five contributors are is egregious, and I think it would, if I were someone wanting to do it, I think I could probably find an attorney to take it, and I think we'd run afoul of the case by depriving someone of half of their investment, of their freedom of speech. So I'm opposed to the five contributors. The information is available. I think the information should be there, but I think we're going to end up, and I'm not knocking Kyle Worthington, it's something we put in, that auto dealers have to put in the stock number and the license number and everything before the ad. We've all heard them, and it's like a machine gun. They find the guy at the station who can most rapidly read it, and they read five cars in 10 seconds, and you can barely understand it, and I dare anyone to write it down and try to go buy that car. It's just not feasible. It's a law we passed. I think this is, although a valid and noble effort, I think that we're probably getting into an area where we're going to end up once again having someone say this runs afoul of the freedom of speech because we're spending so much time that they really, in fact, don't have time to get their message out.
Okay.
So I object to the
okay, I'm going
rest
to,
of it's fine.
I'm going to consider withdrawing this portion of it. First, I want to hear from Representative Seaton.
Should I object to this one?
I believe we.
Did someone offer it, and I objected?
I offered it. You objected.
Okay.
If you didn't, I will.
I, okay. I, I don't think there was...
There's no motion at this time.
I don't think there was a motion...
No.
...to put this amendment before us, Mr. Chairman, just for the record.
I jumped the gun, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Well, then what I'm going to do, if it meets the approval of the committee, I'm going to offer the amendment, and I'm going to withdraw the amendment. Does that keep the record straight?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Do you plan to offer something else? Because I will offer the amendment if you don't, and...
Well, I've withdrawn mine. You're free to offer an amendment.
Okay.
As long as we don't get into grammar.
Okay. I offer amendment number 4, which is E3. And I'd like, if somebody will object.
I object.
That would be amendment number 5.
Amendment number 5.
Number 5.
He means the substance of amendment number 4, well, the new number 5, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
May I speak to it?
Yes.
Okay. The first thing, and I think that the main objection I've heard from Representative Johnson is the length of time this would take. Actually, this proposed paid-for disclaimer is shorter than existing law in one respect. We'll save time by not requiring that the physical street or post office box be read. Only the company name and city and state need to be read. And that's faster than the existing law that requires street addresses to be read. Secondly, to shorten this even further, I'm going to offer a conceptual amendment to the amendment. And that will be on page 1, line 19, between the word top and contributors. I'm going to insert the word 3. That's the first part of the conceptual amendment. And secondly, on page 1, line 17, I want it clear conceptually that the name of the person not have to say corporation or LLC. It would just, or whatever the suffix is, it would just be the name like Coca-Cola, not Coca-Cola Company. And that is an amendment to the amendment that I would offer and ask.
Any objection to the amendment to the amendment?
I'm going to object. I object to the whole concept of this amendment other than the name and identifying who it is and having to speak it. If this were to be written on the screen, and I'm talking specifically television, it doesn't address radio, so there's a problem there. But this was, if this were, no, I object. I just think that we're still going to be, to say, you know, 12200 Timberlane Drive, it doesn't take nearly as much time as it does to say Coca-Cola and their address and everything else. So you're really taking one and replacing it with 3. So the time effort, I still think we run afoul of the same problem.
Yeah, I'm personally, I'm listening to the comments of a person on the committee here who has radio, I don't know about TV, but at least radio, TV also. Mm-hmm. So I'm listening to kind of an expert on the committee here who actually has...
I wouldn't get carried away, Mr. Chair.
Well...
But I do have experience.
Well, you have experience, and the rest of us do not.
I would. Does that? That's an objection to the amendment.
To the
amendment.
Yes.
Okay. Speaking to the amendment to the amendment, if there, what I'm doing with the amendment to the amendment is shortening it, and so it would go part of the way to what you're saying, and then we can get to the substance of the amendment itself, and I would continue my offer to the amendment.
Okay. We call the roll, please. Okay.
Could we just phrase what the amendment to the amendment is before we call the roll?
Sure.
That'd be nice.
Okay. The amendment to the amendment does 2 things, Mr. Chair. On page 1, line 17, where it says person's name, if a person is a non-individual,
right,
you wouldn't have to say the X, you wouldn't have to say Alaska Airlines group or something. It would just be Alaska Airlines, or it would be Bethlehem Steel, Inc., just Bethlehem Steel.
Okay.
That's the first thing. And secondly, on line 19, since we had talked about five contributors, only the top three contributors would have to be listed and stated. So that's the total of amendment to the amendment. Through the chair.
Okay. Is that okay, Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Not.
Okay. Call the roll, please.
Not the company.
Yeah.
Amendment one to amendment five. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes.
Representative Peterson.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Gatto.
Yes.
Chair Lynn.
No.
Five yay, two nay.
Okay, now we're going to go to Amendment 5 itself. Who made the objection for discussion on Amendment number 5? You did? Okay, do you remove the objection?
I do not.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, may I ask you for that?
One quick comment, and we're going to call the roll.
Thank you. Look, the purpose of this bill is to provide notice to the public, to provide transparency. There are some people who, for example, visually impaired folks, who listen to the television and won't see the visual image. They'll hear the ad, but they won't see it, and this will indicate to them and disclose to them the folks who were behind the ad. In addition, the rest of us many times listen to the television. We may be cooking or washing clothes or whatever, but we don't see the image, but we hear the text. In that sense, it's like a radio ad. And what we're doing is making sure that the disclosure reaches both groups of people. There's no harm to it. It may take a little time, but it's disclosing the ad, the sponsors of the ad, to the entire population. It's very important, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seaton, and then Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to ask Mr. Bullard a question.
Please, go ahead.
Thank you. We have in both the bill and the amendment, although it's a deletion part of the amendment here, the contributors. We don't have that bifurcated or defined anywhere. As let's say we have a corporation that doesn't have contributors, or a labor union that is using their treasury. You have earnings in Alaska from a company, and they're using it out of a corporation, they're using it out of their treasury. What does the language that we have in here as the contributors, that would be like with an LLC, I can see that, but how do we differentiate, and what would be the requirement under this disclaimer section that we have in the bill? And the
Mr.
amendment?
Bullard.
Representative Seaton, through the chair. Speaking first to the current amendment under discussion, on line 11, the sentence or line beginning with D, the last two words, if applicable, make that second required disclosure of the top contributors applicable only if the entity has contributors. If there are no contributors, there is no need to disclose the contributors.
Okay.
And follow up?
And follow up. And if we don't have this amendment, do we still have that provision in the bill, or do we need this amendment so that those that don't have contributors have some direction of who they would have to list?
I can respond.
Representative Seaton, through the chair. If you go to the bill, page 5, line 23, the words if any serve that same function. If the person does not have contributors, then they are not required to disclose their contributors.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I have a question.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Bullard, I have a question. What if the top contributors to a corporation or campaign, if there are 10 of them and they all contribute the same amount of money, under this provision, would you have to list all 10?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I'm not sure how this would be interpreted if we had 10 contributors who were donating exactly the same amount.
Yeah, I respond.
Thank you, Mr. Bullard. I'm not sure how it would be interpreted either.
Okay. Representative Gruenberg.
That is not a problem with the amendment, because the same language appears in the bill on page 5, line 22. All we're doing in the amendment is removing it lower down, but it's still the top five contributors have to be listed. And presumably, in the unlikely event that there were six contributors, for example, I think the court would interpret it in a common sense manner. If there are 25, you'd have they couldn't require all 25, and I would think that the court would, or the APOC would, issue some kind of a regulation on the subject. But any time you have a number there, that's something that's going to have to be interpreted.
Well, I would think if we have that happen, it could be perhaps the six largest corporations, and that could probably be done by regulation,
sure,
rather than trying to muddy it up here. President Gatto, then we're going to call the question here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you have six contributors and all of them are the same, they're all tied for first. And so that would require them to all be listed. And if you had five or four and then two that were tied for fifth, they would have to both be listed because they're both in fifth place, according to the language.
But that's, Mr. Chair, that's in the bill itself, not in the amendment.
Okay. Let's call the question. Objection maintained?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, call the roll, please.
Amendment 5 as amended. Representative Gruenberg?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Chair Lynn?
No.
4 yea, 3 nay.
Okay, so amendment number 5 passes.
Okay.
As amended. Okay, we still have several to go here. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, so just for clarification then, we have made a change so it's not identifying the five largest contributors. It'll now be into identifying the three largest contributors. Is that correct? In the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Representative Gruenberg.
This is only the audio portion. The amendment only speaks to the voice. It does not speak to the language in the bill itself. If you wish to make a conforming amendment, I would have no objection. But the text of the amendment itself, Mr. Chair, through the chair to Representative Seaton, is only dealing with the voice. But I would have no objection if you wanted to make such a conforming amendment.
Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, I would make that conforming amendment on the disclaimer so that it would be to identify the person's top five or the five largest, or changing from the five largest contributors to the large. To the three.
I believe that would be conceptual amendment number 6?
Yes, conceptual amendment number 6.
Okay, is there any objection to that? If not, conceptual amendment 6 passes. I believe we have E.5, Representative Peterson. Did you have one before that, Mr. Seeger?
Through the chair, I just had, you know, there's a memo that's attached to both of Representative Peterson's amendments, and I just wanted to point out that we did pass an amendment prohibiting expenditures and contributions from foreign nationals. I don't know if that addresses your E5 amendment.
Well, let's get his amendment offered if he wishes to do so, then we'll get into discussion. President Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment, is it 6
It'd be
now?
7, I believe.
7?
Amendment number 7 has been offered. Any objection for discussion?
Object.
Okay. Representative Seaton objects. Mr. Representative Pigeon, please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason that I've offered this amendment is because here in Alaska, we have a lot of companies and corporations from all over the world that get involved in the extraction of resources here. And in many instances, these corporations form an Alaskan corporation subsidiary, and it gets a little convoluted. And if they were making expenditures to try to influence election, I think it's important that the citizens of Alaska know that this corporation is based in a foreign country outside of Alaska, even though they do have an Alaskan subsidiary. And my intent on this amendment is to let the sun shine in, as I've heard the chairman state on many occasions in the past. And I believe it is strictly about disclosing and allowing the voters to know who's trying to influence their votes.
Yeah, and for clarification, amendment that's been offered, number 7, is E.5.
Correct.
Okay. And Mr. Seeger, do you have any comments on this proposed amendment?
No.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I think that we have on the amendment we adopted, number 3, page 1, subsection 4, is a domestic subsidiary of an entity described in 1, 2, or 3, which are foreign governments. So we have actually adopted the federal prohibition on any such subsidiary. And so I'm objecting because I think that this amendment is unnecessary with the broad amendment we adopted as number 3.
Okay, any other comment on that? Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is going to be a question to Mr. Bullard. And it follows up Representative Seaton's comment. His question, if I may paraphrase it, Representative Seaton, is it kind of, is this amendment necessary since we adopted amendment number 3? And I'd like to focus a little bit, Mr. Chair. There are 4 sentences in the amendment. And it seems to me, if we're talking about a disclosure, does amendment number 3, would it prohibit even a foreign government owning a 10% interest? So is the whole amendment unnecessary or just part of it? Through the chair to Mr. Bullard.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair.
Go ahead.
Amendment 7, titled E5, applies to entities that the prohibition in your adopted Amendment 3 does not speak to. Amendment 3 speaks to entities that are controlled by a foreign national. This speaks to foreign governments that hold more than a 10% ownership interest. That is, there's a great deal of daylight between those two things.
May I follow up, please?
Follow up, please.
Okay, so I would think that the second sentence on lines 10 through 13 is already prohibited in amendment number 3, but the first, which is only a 10%, is not covered in amendment number 3, so we should leave that in. We should take out the second sentence, and the third sentence would also have to be added to this. We should keep that in because that states how you identify the foreign government by name. And then I think the fourth sentence is covered by amendment number 3. Mr. Bullard, am I correct? Specifically, should we keep the fourth sentence in as well?
Mr. Bullard.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair. I would describe your statement as accurate, that the sentence beginning with, if a foreign government, on line 10 of the amendment, and culminating with usual name on line 15, is spoken to by the earlier amendment.
May I inquire?
Inquire.
Okay. To make this simple, the third, I would think, Mr. Bullard, through the chair, that we would have to keep the sentence from line 13 to 15 in. We shouldn't take that out, because that would apply even in a 10% situation. Or do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you think we should take out that sentence as well?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair. No, you're absolutely correct. I looked at the wrong line.
Okay, so you're saying, through the chair, if I may, that we take out the fourth sentence from lines 15 to 18.
You mean line, not sentence?
Line. No, the sentences. I'm going to make an amendment. Is Mr. Buller, you were recommending we take out the final sentence in this, right?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, I don't recommend anything.
Wise man.
Well, let me rephrase my question. Is the final sentence from line 15 to 18, is that not covered in Amendment 3 already?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, the topic is covered, but there is no common definition provided for the chapter. So without further review of how these two would work together, it would be my recommendation, if you wish to adopt the substance of Amendment 7, E5, that you leave that ultimate sentence.
So through the chair, so the only sentence we don't need is the second sentence from lines 10 to 13.
Is that correct, Mr. Bullard?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, I object to the characterization of need, but to conform with Amendment 3, you could, yes, remove that sentence.
Do you want amendment to amendment?
Yes, sir. I move that we delete the sentence beginning on line 10 and ending on line 13, which reads, if a foreign government holds more than 50% of the ownership interest in a person paying for a communication under A of this section, the foreign government must be clearly identified in the communication as the majority owner and controlling interest holder of the person. My amendment is to delete that sentence.
Okay. Any objection? You're without objection. Amendment to the amendment passes.
And I have one more question to Mr. Bullard.
Well, we have 30 minutes. We have another bill to hear. Can any of this be covered in the next committee?
It'll just take a moment, if I may.
Okay, the moment has started.
Mr. Bullard, through the chair, should any of this definition in Amendment 7 also be covering Amendment Number 3, since you said we did not define foreign government in Amendment Number 3? Should that, particularly that last sentence and anything else relevant, should that cover also the stuff in Amendment 3?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, Amendment 7 is an amendment that applies to persons with a ownership interest owned by a foreign government. Amendment 3 speaks to foreign nationals. They're different amendments.
I see. Thank you. No further questions.
But you're not going back to Amendment 3.
Nope. Nothing further.
Okay. Anyway, who objected to this?
Seaton.
Who did? Nobody did?
I have one more question.
Yes, okay.
Mr. Chairman.
This is on the amendment to the amendment.
No. That was adopted. It's the amendment.
We're back to the amendment.
Okay. We are
the
back
basic
to the
amendment.
Amendment 7.
As amended.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm still trying to grapple with the idea of Amendment 7 in relationship to Amendment 3, and I just wanted to ask Mr. Bullard.
Go ahead.
We have a prohibition in Amendment 3 for foreign nationals, and on line 8 and 9, we say in this section, foreign nationals includes a foreign government and every political subdivision of a foreign government. How is that not what we're talking about in Amendment 7?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, it is absolutely what is discussed in Amendment 7. but that is not a definition that is provided for all of AS 1513. That is confined to that particular statutory section.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, great. Would anybody like to remove the objection to amendment number 7?
Sure, I'll remove my objection.
Okay, amendment number 7 passes, and I believe we're on to...
As amended.
As amended, thank you. We have E.6. Representative Peterson would like to offer E.6.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move amendment number...
That would be amendment number 8.
Which is amendment number 8.
Okay, please speak to the amendment.
And I'll object for discussion.
Okay, object for discussion. Go ahead.
This I put together just because there are some corporations who have moved the home office, we'll say, of their corporation to a foreign location for the purposes of avoiding income taxes. And this would require them to actually disclose where they are located, where they've relocated themselves for the purposes of trying to evade income taxes.
Okay. Any questions or comment? Do you remove your objection?
I'm trying to understand it. Can we ask Mr. Bullard?
Mr. Bullard, please, can you speak to proposed amendment number 8?
Members of the committee, through the chair, is there a specific question in reference to this amendment?
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Bullard, I'm trying to understand, this is in the report section, and I'm trying to understand where we're asking for a different address other than their the address they report on tax issues. I guess I'm just unclear as to if you had three subsidiaries, or if you were in California and you had a subsidiary in Alaska, or if you were or if you had an organization here, where would
original objection, the basic.
I'm unclear as to what this means, I guess. So if you could explain to me what it means, I guess.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, McNabb, on page 3, line 8 of the bill, the person required to file an expenditure report under this section has to include the name, address, principal occupation, and employer, or the individual filing the report. And so that's where the address currently required under the bill is reported. Representative Peterson's amendment provides that if that person has a different address for tax purposes, that address would be the address used instead of that address under line 8 of the bill.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to determine how we figure a company has multiple places of business, and how do we determine whether they're correctly reporting their address versus their company headquarter address? I mean, if we're saying your company headquarter address is your tax address, and now they can put a different address in here if they're... I guess I'm just confused.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For example, if there was a corporation by the name of American Widgets, and everyone would assume that was an American corporation, but if they had moved for tax purposes to the Cayman Islands than their address listed on their contribution report would say Cayman Islands instead of Philadelphia or wherever it was that they had originally incorporated.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton.
In that example, wouldn't that have been prohibited in our bill because they're foreign nationals, foreign corporations are not going to be able to make these expenditures? So, and I'm trying to figure out, I think our more normal thing would be a corporation in Delaware, incorporated in Delaware, and are we saying that they're not going to use their corporate address anymore, that they're going to use their local office address instead of their incorporation and their federal tax address?
Representative Peterson?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, maybe we should ask Mr. Bullard if he thinks this amendment is necessary since we've adapted amendment number 3 earlier.
Okay, Mr. Bullard.
Representative Seaton and Peterson through the chair, if the sole purpose and intent of this amendment is to identify companies that have taken their tax address offshore, it is my understanding that any business or entity that is has provided an address that's offshore would be prohibited not only under current federal law, but under the Amendment 3 that you have adopted.
So as I understand it, this is not needed.
I'll withdraw the amendment. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Amendment has been withdrawn. Do we have any further amendments? Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
I apologize for my absence last week, but I do have a conceptual amendment, and I would like to put on the table for discussion.
Okay, let's hear it.
Page 4, line 16, prohibited expenditures.
Wait just a minute. Page 4, line what?
16.
16.
Okay.
And the purpose of this is a person may not make an expenditure anonymously unless, and my intention would be to, after anonymously, delete unless, down to line 27.
Would you please show me where this is again, please?
Line 18.
Page 4 or line 18. Okay.
After anonymously.
Anonymously, comma.
Delete the language after that.
Okay.
Down to line 27. So that the section 15.13.04 or 08.084 would say prohibited expenditures. A person may not make expenditures anonymously or using a fictitious name or using the name of another person.
And what does that do practically?
It basically, where this says that you can, if it's anonymously to influence an outcome of a ballot proposition may be made anonymously. If it's a billboard or a sign can be paid for anonymously. Or if printed material other than an advertisement made in a newspaper. So basically what this means is you can advertise in a newspaper with anonymity or in a sign with anonymity. And I'm wondering if this particular provision doesn't prohibit everything we've tried to do. Because if I buy a newspaper ad, can I do it anonymously and not have to disclaim all this other stuff that we've talked about? And so what this basically does is it sheds light on everything. There will be no anonymous expenditures for any reason that I can find.
Okay. Mr. Bullard, do you have a comment on that?
Members of the committee, Representative Johnson, through the chair, the United States Supreme Court and McIntyre recognized a certain right for individuals to make certain anonymous contributions. It's a limited right, and that's what Section 15.13.084 currently provides for. It's crafted to the individual who's making certain sort of de minimis contributions for billboards, etc. It does not apply to people spending great amounts of money or persons other than individuals.
Mr. Chairman,
billboards are pretty expensive, even though we don't have them here.
I was going to say, Mr. Chairman, if we buy a full page newspaper ad anonymously, that is not cheap and that's not de minimis. And I appreciate the and this is one that I think it's a giant loophole in our law. I think that it is, I certainly appreciate free speech, but there's nothing that guarantees anonymous speech. Maybe there is.
Representative Gatto, and then...
Your hand went up very fast.
No, no.
No, just a minute. Representative Gatto, and then Representative Grunberg.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We see it all the time, you know, Americans for progress, Americans for health, America, you know, and we wonder, who the heck are they? They could be a corporation that's opposing...
Anything.
Anything, right. And we always give it a nice name. So Representative Johnson is, I think, on to something here. I don't like anonymous ads because they're always, and I say always, meant to give a name that you will support unless you actually find out what they do.
Good. Representative Grunberg, and I want to bring this to the table.
This is a very important amendment, and I support it. The bill goes next to judiciary. I would ask for a friendly amendment to your amendment. And the friendly amendment to the amendment, and this is something that's...
Well, just get to it.
That's really crucial. I'd like to add a severability clause to the bill, which says that if any provision in it is declared unconstitutional, it shall not affect the remainder of the bill. And I'd ask that to be a friendly amendment, conceptually, and I'd ask Mr. Bullard to provide a legal memo on the McIntyre case and everything else to the Judiciary Committee on this point.
How does that apply to conceptual amendment? We're talking about the whole bill now, right?
No, it's an amendment to the amendment, and the second part of the amendment is to add a severability clause to the bill itself. I'd ask through the chair, Representative Johnson, would you consider that a friendly amendment?
I certainly consider that a friendly amendment as long as it's to every portion of the bill, if any portion of the bill, not just this portion.
It would be.
I certainly would accept that as a friendly amendment, Mr. Chairman.
I'd ask the amendment to the amendment be adopted.
Okay. Without objection? Any other comment? Do we have any objection to AB amendment number
nine.
Amendment number nine?
Yeah. Right.
Conceptual amendment, Johnson? Good. Okay, that passes. Are there any other amendments? Okay. Let's go to the basic bill then.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Representative Seaton.
On this last point that we just adopted this amendment, I want to make sure that it's understood that we've asked our legal counsel to drop a memo on this and that will be forwarded along with the bill.
Yes.
To the next committee.
Yeah. Is that okay, Mr. Bullard? Mm-hmm.
Representative and Chair, members of the committee, I have heard you express your desire that I make this amendment. I incorporate it in the CS that may pass out of this committee, and that this CS will travel with a legal memorandum to the next committee of referral.
Yes, that's
explaining this.
Thank you very much.
The request was specifically on the Johnson, the McIntyre case. That's an important issue we need to discuss in judicial.
What's that now?
I don't know if you want to close public testimony. We have these guys that okay. They're all
okay. We have online here. Mr. Bullard, he's been talking to us extensively, giving us some help. We have Holly Hill from APOC. Do you wish to comment anything, Ms. Hill?
Chairman Lynn, this is Holly Hill, Executive Director of the APOC. Not at this time, sir.
Yeah, I'm going to go through that. Mr. Patasson, Department of Law, do you have anything you'd like to add to this discussion?
I have prepared a few remarks about questions from last session, but it does seem like we're pinched for time here. If any of the committee members have specific questions today, I'll certainly answer them. If not, they can get in touch with me directly.
Fine, and you'll be available for the next committee of referral, which is Judiciary Committee. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Anybody in the audience that would like to offer any kind of testimony? If not, public testimony is closed.
Mr. Chair.
We've had our amendments. Yes, Representative Grunberg.
Representative Wilson has a question.
Representative Wilson.
I could barely see your mouth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess it's for Mr. Bullard. You gave us a memorandum, and at the very end of this packet, dated March 3rd, in the very last of that memorandum, it says, if all the independent expenditures must be disclosed within 24 hours, this sentence is no longer necessary for the purposes for which it was originally included, is redundant, and should be removed from the bill. Was that taken care of in any of the amendments?
Representative Wilson, through the chair. When you considered the bifurcated amendment, the half of which was tabled, I believe that you've reconciled that earlier in the session today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, public testimony is closed. We're going to bring this to the table. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have another amendment, but I'm not going to make it. I'm going to work with people on the Judiciary Committee.
Could you give us a general topic of
Yes, I will. It is
potential amendment.
That what we have talked about here is candidates and elections, and we've left out there are expenditures that are made to influence politics in other ways. There are expenditures made to influence specific legislation. There are expenditures made to influence other things that don't appear in the election, be it, and we've had cases of ads run, me specifically, on my position on a specific bill, run in my home district. Unfortunately, it was, or fortunately, it was run against me by a group that actually got me votes, so it was a positive thing. But I think those kind of expenditures need to be looked at as well. If it is anything that anyone who's investing money to influence our process, not just to see who gets here, but a piece of legislation or a resolution or anything that comes before this body, and I apologize for my absence, and it's something
well, no,
I feel
you, no,
very
no,
purely
no apology
about,
necessary.
But I think that in the next committee, we should take up not only candidates, but issues, individual legislation that happens when we're in Juneau. We see all kinds of expenditures made that say, you know, call your legislator, call this and influence this bill. I think the citizens of this state have a right to know who's trying to influence legislation, not only elected officials. So I want to put that on the record as something that I'm going to be very keen on. If it doesn't happen, I'll introduce it on the floor. I'm going to work with the chairman of the judiciary, other members of the body, because I think if we're going to be transparent, we shouldn't go halfway.
Well, what I understand what you're saying, I agree with
Chairman.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
I just want to tack a little bit on to what Representative Johnson has just said, because many times the advertisements or whatever that are run are very misleading.
Always.
And I'm a little bit tired of some of that, and if we can do something, I don't care if it's the truth, as much as when it's misleading. And when it's misleading, I don't like that. And so I think that if we're going to have people out there spending money for those very reasons, then I think we need to make sure that the facts are correct and what they're saying is so that the public really know that what they're seeing is above board instead of very deceiving.
Okay. So thank you very much. Do you agree with that, Representative Peterson?
I do, Mr. Chairman. I think we've made some good changes to this bill. It's still probably a work in progress, and the Judiciary Committee may have to do a little fine-tuning on it here and make sure the intent and wording mesh. But I think we've done good work, and I applaud the committee.
Do I entertain a motion to move the bill?
I'll move.
Representative Gruenberg moves the bill.
The version as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Right. Any objection? If not, thank you very much. I'm very proud of the work we've done on HB 409. I'd like to thank everybody who worked. I'd like to thank my staffer, Mike Seeker, for the excellent work he's done on this. I don't know how far we can go, but I want to bring on the table, at least, HB 251. Yes.
Good job.
Okay. At ease. Everybody has. We can today with HB 251. I'd like to welcome Representative Jay Ramos, who's chair of the Judiciary Committee, where we have a lot of interesting topics come up. And please introduce yourself and tell us about this bill, and we do what we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, gentlemen, and Representative Wilson. It's nice to see you. It's nice to see you this morning. House Bill 251 is a bill that was brought to me by tow truck operators in my hometown, and we have a number of them that wish to testify if time allows today, so I'm going to be extremely brief, Mr. Chair, and then I can come back before the committee at an appropriate time. What happens is people often, a tow truck is necessary, a tow charge is $80 to $180, the car gets impounded, the bank takes the car back, and the poor tow truck operator, who's only following instructions, they then have to stand behind the bank. And so if you're standing behind a $10,000unpaid lien by the bank and you're owed $85 or $185, you can imagine that the tow truck operators are writing off a lot of work. And these are hardworking people. We've all been on the wrong side of tow trucking hook, and we've all been on the right side of a tow trucking hook, depending on the circumstances and where you parked. But in this case, I'm looking out for the little guy who is standing behind the bank, and they cannot easily absorb these losses. HB 251 would help mitigate this business risk to smaller companies and allow them to be first in line to collect on lien situations, so the bank would have to clear out their small bills. And through the Alaska Towing Association, I believe that we've got some people from Interior Towing, Borealis Towing, S&S Towing, and Alaska Towing Association that would like to testify. Mr. Chairman, I would rather that you took the public testimony if they're available, if it's accommodating to you and the committee members, and then I'm delighted to come back whenever you see fit to offer answer questions for the committee.
Okay. Thank you. We only have about 5 minutes at most, so I would like to hear from Margaret Rabbi. Are you there?
I am.
Could you please offer your testimony, identify yourself, and keep it as short as possible so we can move expeditiously, please? I apologize. No, I don't, because there's some other very important legislation we had to work on.
No problem. My name is Margaret Raby. I'm here representing the Alaska Towing Association, which represents the towing industry members from across the state. We have members in Southeast Alaska, South Central Alaska, and, of course, here in the interior. I'm also here more or less representing my own company, Badger Towing, which is a local company here in Fairbanks. The bottom line here is that the Alaska statutes allow for a towing and storage lien to be placed against any vehicle that we tow and store on the behalf of anybody else at the request of a police officer or other. Basically, that means we're supposed to get paid for our service, and then whoever has an interest in the vehicle could have the vehicle. Unfortunately, what HB 51 needs to address is what we consider to be a loophole in the Alaska statute that says the primary lien holder against the vehicle has a priority over our towing storage lien, and they have the ability to come in, take their collateral without paying for the services that we've provided. Although it's not usually looked at it that way, towers are in partnership, really, with the emergency services of Alaska, such as police, fire, paramedic. When there's an incident on one of our highways, we respond the same as the rest of those organizations. The only difference is we expect to be paid directly. We're not paid by the taxpayers' money. And it does not seem appropriate that we should absorb losses for doing the same service for the same situations that all the rest of the emergency service workers get paid for. We'd like to see this situation corrected, and the Alaska Towing Association, on behalf of its members, considers it a necessity to avoid excessive hardship to the various members of the industry. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Gruenberg?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Raby. As I understand it, and I think this is, from I've looked at the bill, I think this seems to be a good bill. The problem arises because you only have a possessory lien, and there's nothing to prevent a bank from coming in with their repo people, taking the vehicle out, and destroying your possessory lien. Is that not correct. The problem?
That is indeed the problem, yeah.
And so it's really important because they lose their lien once the vehicle leaves the lot. And my question to you is, and I'm not that familiar with the lien provisions in Title 28, do you have a right to retain the possession of the vehicle until you're paid, or should this be made, as well as just a possessory lien, a lien that would follow the vehicle?
It should be a lien that would follow the vehicle, most definitely. The reality is that it's not, and you know we utilize the possessory lien storage, utilize that to make sure they get paid, and it works, except in this one situation where a perfected lien takes priority.
Mr. Chair, we can deal with that issue in judiciary, but I'm mentioning to the sponsor of the bill that this may go beyond that, and that might be that with the industry, we'd want to look at making this not just a possessory lien, but that the lien would follow the vehicle, because those are the people that should be paid first, the towing companies, in my opinion.
Okay, thank you. We will consider that when we get to the body of the bill, and we cannot resolve it here, probably. We can address it in the next committee referral, which is chaired by the sponsor of this particular bill. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Raby. Sean Ross?
Sean Ross was unable to stay here.
Okay, please.
I was speaking on his behalf.
Okay, please thank him for his participation anyway. Mr. Ken Storley? Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Please introduce yourself and make your comments as briefly as you can.
My name is Ken Storley. I am the owner of Borealis Towing here in Fairbanks, another small towing company. And I believe that we need to do something about House Bill 251 because these lien holders want to take their car without paying their bills, even though, like she said, we are working for police or private property owners. We're doing something at somebody else's request. We're not doing it at our own volition, just going out and grabbing cars. So we need to be paid for something we were requested to do. And with this lien the way it is, they can just come and take their car.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Mark Davis?
Yes. Good morning. My name is Mark Davis. I'm the owner of Interior Towing and Salvage. I'm one of the people who had brought this to Representative Ramos to try to correct this problem. I sympathize with the lien holders that sometimes people get these cars out there and get them into trouble, but
I can't do it.
We cannot, as small businesses, afford to absorb very many of these, and there is a few of the lien people who are actually using it to their advantage and are pretty much basically holding us at blackmail, threatening us to go back to check, you know, through their records to see if they'd ever lost any other cars and hold us responsible for any and every car they ever lost through our particular company. And this House bill would help correct that problem. We're not trying to steal anyone's cars. What we're trying to do is be paid for our services, and anything that you folks could do to help us in regards to correcting this, I would deeply appreciate it. So would everybody else in this room.
Okay, thank you very much. Anybody else on the line who would like to testify? Anybody?
Sean
Hess. I beg your pardon?
Sean Hess from SDF Towing.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir.
I'm in favor of HB 251. I am an example of sort of what happened. I was requested by Alaska State Troopers to pick up a motor vehicle that was DUI. The vehicle went off the roadway, and I showed up on scene, winched the vehicle out, recovered it from troopers, took it back to my yard for towing and storage. The credit union came in, felt that they need not pay my tow bill. They went and got their attorney. They told me I had to return the vehicle to them, at which point they were going to return it to the owner of the vehicle that had originally gotten the DUI, which I felt was very unfair. And I actually contested it and went to court over it, and I actually lost on that and ended up having to settle with an insurance company trying to get my compensation for my towing and recovery of the vehicle.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anybody else online?
Representative,
we have to draw this to a close here. Representative Gatto.
Thanks, sir. I have a small question. If AST made the request for you to tow a vehicle,
no,
is it required that in the event you do not get paid in any other way, that they would be responsible for the request?
No, sir. That's part of their contract. Unless you take it to their yard, they do not pay your tow bill. If it goes to your yard, then you, the registered owner or lien holder of the vehicle is supposed to be responsible for the bill of the vehicle.
Yeah, just a back second question. So you have a contract with AST. Does not that generate additional income for you where, because you have a contract, you are the first person that they would call and maybe the only person they would call?
No, sir. There's actually several companies that are on the rotation list, and they rotate them fairly. And a lot of times, a majority of the vehicles that we end up with are vehicles that nobody comes and claims, and we end up hauling them out of landfill at our cost anyhow.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Representative Gruenberg had asked if we can get a copy of the judge's opinion. Representative Gruenberg?
Yes, sir, through the chair. Did the judge issue a written decision or an oral decision from the bench or something we can get a copy of?
They were basing it on the case of Aurora Towing.
It was Credit Union 1 versus the Aurora Towing out of Anchorage, and it was dated in 2002.
If somebody could get
through the chair, please.
Through the chair. If somebody could get us.
One moment. Yes.
That's a different speaker.
Oh, yeah. Who is this next speaker? Who's speaking right now?
My name is Mark Davis with Interior Towing.
Yeah, we had to have that for our clerk over here.
That lawsuit generated from Credit Union 1 versus Aurora Towing, and there was a court judgment that was handed down on it, so there was a precedent set on it. I can see to it that Representative Raymond's office gets a copy of it if you'd like.
Yes, through the chair. This is Representative Gruenberg. We need to get that opinion. If it was written or if it was from the bench, we need a transcript of that. That's very important.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anybody else online? Anybody else in the audience like to comment? If not, I'm going to close public testimony. And unfortunately, because of the clock, we're going to have to draw this to conclusion today. Representative Ramirez, we're going to attempt to get this as much as we can to the head of the line at the next hearing and attempt to move it out at that time, if that's possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. With that, we're going to try to hear Representative Ramirez's Bill 251 at our next meeting, which is on Thursday. We may hear electric and telephone cooperative voting pending a referral. We had the Violent Crimes Emergency Compensation, HB 400, coming up. We have HB 348, Personnel Board Membership, very important, I think, and HB 349, Suicide Prevention Council Meetings. Thank you for your good work today, and I think we did especially good work on the United bill. With that, thank you for your indulgence. We're adjourned at 10 minutes after 10.